Welcome back to Dogs and Divas. Not sure what happened there. Welcome back to Dogs and Divas. I'll edit that out or maybe I'll leave it. I don't care. My name is Jesse.
I'm Tiffany.
I'm Mary Sue.
And as you guys have probably heard or seen, we are going to do a Facebook Live tonight. We're also going to turn it into a podcast. So we're going to leave this thing rolling. The entire length of the podcast or entire length of the Facebook Live event. And we're going to tackle service dogs and what a service dog is, how we find them, how we select or who selects the foundations we use, and just a wide-ranging questions. In fact, Mary Sue's got a 33. Well, we might be here till midnight. She's got a list of things for us to talk about. So we'll go down the list. We'll also be checking in with the Facebook Live comments and anyone who wants to reach out and ask questions about a service dog or how you get one or what they cost or why you see 742 different fundraising efforts we have on our Facebook pages right now, why we're doing that, who we're doing it for, and what's important about that and why you shouldn't stop scrolling past it and actually look at it and read it. So all those things are important. But you've heard me talk last couple of podcasts. I just wrapped my mind around whatever. So, Tiff, you want to say some stuff you haven't been on here in 2 months, probably?
No.
Well, this is going to be a great Facebook Live. We're going to get a lot of information out of her. Probably should have had her drinking already. So, anyhow. That's where we are. What's been going on around here? As I did the podcast last week, we talked about current events that were occurring would be occurring in the future. We're in our second week of the 5-week law enforcement class. This has been a troubling week for us. Tracking is atrocious. Detection has been a battle a little bit on one or two dogs, not having fun, not getting as energetic as we like. So we've had our hands full with that, but that's nothing new. We'll push through it and we'll figure it out and we'll get the dog's attention and start making headway. We got certification in a couple weeks, so we got to get something rolling. And we have 1 minute before Facebook Live, so I'm going to fire this thing up and we'll get started with our interview process. Well, that's not what it was. That's neat. That's spectacular. All right, let me see what that is about. Surely when we go live, it won't be sideways. Right now, the screen, there we go. That was scary. The screen was literally sideways. So sorry about that in the podcast, folks. All right. Facebook Live.
Fix it.
I'm trying. There you go.
Bend it.
There you go. You can't see?
No, it's like there.
Oh, there we go. Centered up on the screen. All right.
I need to get onto the live so that I can see the
All right, question. We're waiting on Mary Sue to join us. My name's Jesse. You guys know that.
I'm Tiffany.
I'm Mary Sue.
You probably knew that too. Mary Sue's a hide behind the screen. She didn't want to be on camera today. Nope. We got 5 people jumping on already, so we're gonna. There we go. Mary Sue's up and live. So
I am.
Obviously, you know what's going on tonight. Mary Sue's been trying to get us rolling on this thing for about 3 weeks, longer than 3 weeks. Give it to Mary Sue, and she can throw it out the window. The phone. We took the phone off the hook, but it's making a bunch of racket. All right. So obviously, there's a purpose for this podcast and Facebook Live. As you can see, the microphone's in my face, so don't fret. The whole purpose of that is so we can reduce this down to a podcast format if necessary. So those of you that might miss it as a live on Facebook, then it'll be on Dogs and Divas podcast page or podcast platform, all, you know, iTunes and Spotify and the whole realm is all there. So you can go back and listen to it if you miss it here. Obviously, if I'm saying that, then you won't miss it. You're already here. So if you want to go back and check it out later in its full entirety, it'll be in the podcast format as well. So I'll turn it over to Mary Sue and she's going to start us off.
We'll see how it goes. This is my first time interviewing. It's going to be a little bit more challenging than I thought it would be. It's not easier to be on this side and answer your questions than it is to pose them. So bear with us tonight. So let me start off from the top. My name is Mary Sue Adams, and I am a volunteer for Giuseppini Canine Services. I help with fundraising and event planning as it pertains to the law enforcement and veteran events. And I also serve as the Director of Service Dog Program for Battleground 22 Foundation, which is a 501c3 run entirely by volunteers. So through this partnership, I've had some great exposure to service dogs and working dogs, all of which I contribute to what started out as a business relationship with Giuseppini for my first personal protection dog, and then my second personal protection dog, and now has become a close friendship with Jesse and Tiffany Smith, who are the owners of Giuseppini Canine Services. And I am very excited about today's live broadcast. It gives us the opportunity to go over our service dog program and all the nitty-gritty that goes on behind the scenes. And we get a lot of questions at Battleground 22, and I'm sure that Jesse and Tiffany get a lot of questions as well. So we're here to get all those questions answered tonight. For those of you attending live, we're going to go through the basics and save the end for any questions that you might have. I'll be taking notes, and if we don't cover it, we'll make sure that we address those questions that we missed. And if you're not able to stay for the entire broadcast, we'll have this available recorded on Dogs and Divas, and you'll be able to see it there. So with that, let's get started. Why don't you two, just in case we have anybody here that doesn't know you by face, introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about your background and your experience.
I'll let you go first, babe.
Super. My name is Tiffany Smith. My background has been military police. I don't know why you're laughing. It's not funny.
I'm laughing at
Jeremy. Jeremy James sorry. Already got a question. Wants me to describe a football bat. I don't know if I can do that, Jeremy, in this setting.
Back to me.
Go ahead, Tiffany.
I spent several years active duty Marine Corps, military police. I transitioned out, worked for the Department of Defense as a federal officer there.
What?
Met Jesse, married the guy, ended up going to Indiana, one of the largest kennels in the U.S. There I had exposure to being able to work with dietary needs, personal welfare, the dogs.
Happened with the protection dogs.
Yeah, the protection dogs, the executive family protection branch. Started a breeding, whelping, puppy program. Also a boarding facility there on the premises. And worked hand in hand with our personal protection dogs. It was just Jesse and I the entire time. So we also worked with this other one.
Which one? What are you talking about? What?
That trailer with all those dogs.
Oh, the
service dogs.
We probably want to mention.
Don't want to talk about
the siege alert dogs that we did obedience on. Yeah, that wound up being
30 to 40 caught up in a labs. Yeah, it was. Anyway,
then we moved to Wisconsin.
Tips
all over the place. Here, let me go.
All right, you ready?
Oh my gosh, this is a wrap. This is going to be the rest of the day because he's a yapper.
All right, my name is Jesse. Most everybody knows me, but if you don't, was a cop in Georgia after my Army time. Worked for a local sheriff's office, county police department, and that's where I got my first dog 23 years ago. Yeah, I'm old. So my first dog I got in 2000, so this is 2023. Worked a dog on the street for several years and then transitioned to a civilian job working for the Marine Corps. The purpose of that was to be a handler for a bomb dog. And I worked my way up over those 6 years to the trainer. Went to a bunch of trainers courses in Texas and Indiana and back to Texas. And ended up taking a job in Indiana in 2012 and spent 2.5 years there. And then Tiffany and I sat down one night and we were like, we need to do more. Where is more? Where can we do more at? And we searched the entire United States of America. Me being from Georgia. And we end up in Wisconsin. And we've been here almost this October would be 9 years, and it hasn't been zero regrets. Work has been good. The community's been great to us, and we have had a tremendous time helping a lot of people. So that's what we're going to talk about. Who do we help? How have we helped them? So that's our spiel. That's my spiel. Tiff's followed me for the last, that's 13 plus years that we've known each other longer than that, but we've been working together for 13 plus.
Every day.
Nothing but dogs.
Every day?
Yep.
7 days a week?
Every day.
Every day.
It's a lot of fun. You should try it.
With your spouse. It's super.
So just a little sidebar here. My live is not live. Is yours live there?
I think so.
It says live,
okay. And yeah.
Then you're going to have to watch the questions and let
no
me
problem.
Know.
It's okay. Popping up. There's awesome. only been Jeremy James. He needs somebody already laughed it or he laughed it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to do that. So why don't we just jump right into it? You don't just do service dogs. You do a lot of things for veterans. What is it that you do for veterans?
Obviously it could be wide ranging from general pet obedience. We run across a lot of veterans in, you know, that are local that have problems with their dog, just need a question answered. So we do pet obedience. That's Tiffany's, one of her primary tasks. Obviously, when you have a primarily a two-man show, like we have staff workers and we have people, office manager, we have part-time help in the afternoons to help us out. But when we're just doing work, our focus is how to help. If we run across a veteran or a law enforcement officer who has a personal dog, how can we help him get better with his dog? How can we help that relationship better? So that's one aspect, is just pet obedience.
Behavior modification,
how to help it behave in the home the way it's supposed to, or at least the way they would like for it to. Not everybody wants the same level of obedience that I expect, but they want to have a nice home relationship. So that's one aspect.
You guys do a lot on a personal aspect, though. I mean, there's been many times that somebody will call you in the middle of the night, or you hear about a veteran that is in a really bad place, and you've done things like give your personal dog to a suicidal veteran.
Oh, for sure.
There's a lot of different things other than just that. Talk a little bit about.
Well, so the whole point of doing more, like that's been, I feel like that's been my, when you're in the world of, at least in the atmosphere of helping people, and that's what military is really about, right? How do we clean up this country, or clean up our own country, or clean up our own, you know, other world's problems? So we could debate that for hours. Do we belong in country X or country Y? But a lot of times that is to help them have a better life. And so it's everything about what we've been doing our whole life is helping other people. So when we get a question, it doesn't matter what it is, then we try to figure out how to do more. And so the more for us has been to keep moving, to figure out where we could do the most. Because we're always handicapped, whether you're when you're working for somebody else, it's, well, we could, but we don't have the resources, or you don't have the time, or that's not your responsibility, or pass it off to whomever it belongs to. And we had.
Or it comes down to money.
Sure. And we had a good portion of autonomy at our last job, but it was also, it was a busy business, and they're making lots of money, and the focus is go, 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 go. And coming here, we can slow that down. And the do more part was where can we do more at? And so what Racer's getting at is there's nothing I wouldn't do for somebody. There's nothing Tiffany wouldn't do for somebody. And so when the call comes, I'm going to answer, and I'll do whatever it is, whatever's got to be done. And she would as well.
Absolutely.
So that's what I got behind when I started volunteering, was that you guys did. I saw that this was what you guys were and you are. And that's why I got involved with it as well. So I wanted to make sure that other people knew, though, what you're doing behind the scenes. And that's what we're doing today. But it's not just the service dogs. You guys are there, and you do. I'm the only non-veteran of the group for both here and Battleground 22, but isn't it called a buddy check?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. And Truth First Recalls refers to it as warrior call. Like, take a call, be honest, and reach out to people. Because at the end of the day, you know, all the suicides and all the stuff, there's multitude of different programs that are out there. But the only person that knows that I'm messed up the most is her. And that's who needs to identify that, people that know you the most. And so the buddy call, the buddy check, is that's what it's about. It's about, hey, call your friends, call your old service members, your old battle buddies, and talk to them. And you'll know if he's in a good place, because we're all going to lie. Oh, yeah, how's it? Oh, that's good. We're good. We're just working. We're busy. We're good, blah, blah, blah. But everybody has stress. And what stress is that? And how is that alleviated? How can we alleviate for each other? And what makes life better for each other? Like, that's what it we're supposed to be for.
Great. Yep. Is there any personal reason that you guys do it other than wanting to help? I mean, is there something hidden down below that we don't know about?
It's all part of being a veteran. It's part of being a first responder the entire time. All we want to do is make life more manageable and easier for people because we've been there. We know what it's like, and we choose to try to make a difference where we can, and this is the only way we can at the time. We know we're going home every night at the end of our day, so we try to make sure the people around us can also do the same and have the same confidence in us and makes.
Go ahead. I'm just going to turn that up a little bit so they can hear a little bit, just to make sure. Keep talking. Don't get distracted by me.
You got me distracted.
All right. Nancy, let me know if that's better. Somebody was saying they couldn't hear as well as they'd like, so I want to make sure that's going up. Obviously, we're trying to talk into this, but we need to project to the computer as well.
Is my thing up?
That won't matter. It's the computer is not picking up, so make sure it's working. But what was the question again? I'm sorry.
Was there a hidden meaning behind why you are so generous in your time and your efforts? And
it matters.
I think it's... Isn't that all our responsibilities, though, like as humans?
Yes.
Like that's just what we're supposed to do.
Yep. The way I describe it is it's my heart's work. So I love dogs, but I also want to give back. And this has been a really good fit in that, right? And I think it's your heart's work, too, is I guess what I'm trying to get to. And we're going to talk about this a little bit in more detail later on. But you are there as a support system for all of our canine handlers and any veteran that comes to the table and needs something. Without question, you guys are there for them. And that's important to know as we continue going on and talking about the service dog program. So how did you get started doing it, though? I mean, what was your first service dog? What prompted you to do this? How did you get started with it?
So it was crazy luck to be square. We were both working in Indiana at the time. And I was standing outside of one of our box rooms, which nobody knows what that means, but that's basically where we're teaching odor work to a police dog. And a gentleman named Ron Cameron walked up to me, and he was over the special forces trainers group at the business we were working at, Bone Lake Kennels. And he said he had a sticky note or a sheet of paper, and he had some information written on it. And he said, "Hey, I just got the phone with Chris Corbin, who is a SF handler who got blown up and lost both of his legs. He has been talking to another person named Rick Kale, and Rick Kale needs a service dog for a gentleman named Brenner Maraca, who's in the hospital at John Hopkins. And they want a service dog, and every company in the world is saying a 2-year wait, and they don't want to wait 2 years, and they want me. They called me, talked to me, and I don't know nothing about that. So would you call the guy?" And so I said, "Yeah, hand me the note." And I don't know. I called Rick and talked to him, and he told me, Brenna's story, and he said, "I need to get a service dog for him." I said, "Hell, I got it. I'm done. I got one." He's like, "What do you mean? You don't have to train it?" I'm like, "I've already trained. I just need to focus train it on the specific task that this guy needs. But yeah, that's a no brainer. I can do it." And he said, he was not confused, but he was just like, "All right, what's it going to cost me?" And I said, "Well, let me call you back on that. And it's not going to be super expensive, but it's going to cost us some money." So long story short, I drove out that weekend. Like literally, I grabbed Macho and I drove out to Baltimore, and I met Rick. He's the founder of Faraday's Troops First Foundation, him and David Faraday. And I met Brendan, and the rest has been history from there. That was in 2013.
Diego.
We showed him Macho first, but he had some complications, but he had continuation of his surgeries on his arms. And so we wound up taking Macho and giving it to TJ Brooks. And then we circled back with Brendan whenever he was coming out of the hospital. Cause the hospital didn't want the dog in this room because he was having some, to be quite frank, he had a double arm transplant. So they took arms off of a cadaver and put them on his, and they didn't want any infections. They wanted that to take and settle in. So we, but that started the relationship dealing with Macho and Rick.
So that leads us into what organizations do you provide service dogs to?
Sure. So right now we're doing for Troops First. We've been their sole provider since 2013. And then obviously Battleground 22 stood up, I guess a year and a half ago or so now. And so that was not their purpose, but obviously seeing the need that's out there, then we've been doing them for them ever since as well. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how, to be blunt, you push Battleground into doing the service dogs for a really good reason. Can sure. you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So I, obviously Rich Isaacson is, and I hope I don't put his business out there, but I got a phone call from the chief of police in Delafield, and, to make a long story short, the phone call was, hey, we have a veteran who's messed up pretty bad, and we've had several run-ins with him, and he's not been in trouble yet, but you know, he's drinking too much, and we're just worried about his well-being, and we don't want nothing bad to happen to him. We don't want to have to do anything bad to him as well. And I've heard about your programs and what you do, and can you do a dog for him? Or would you do one, or how can you find him one? And I said, at the time, I didn't know who he was talking about. And he told me Richard's name, and I knew it because from some other stuff that had happened months prior, he had provided application to us, and we had evaluated him and another gentleman. And the other guy got the dog first. And so I knew exactly what he was talking about. And I said, I'm done. Don't worry about it. It's done. I'll figure it out. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but it'll happen. So we got in touch with Richard and got him. He needed rehab first. He needed to get some mental health work done first. And a foundation I was working with at the time basically said, no, we can't do it. We won't do it. We don't have enough money. We got other people in the pipeline, even though this was a super big need. And a priority to me, which doesn't mean it's their priority, but I thought he might be one of the 22 if we didn't make it a priority. So I got with Greg, called Greg and said, hey, we got to get this guy out of here, and he's got to go see some people that are smarter than me. And we done that. And while that was happening, I ran out to the Humane Society and I grabbed Miss Drinkwine, who's over the Humane Society out there. I told her what I was looking for, and she said, I got a dog, he's 7. But it's a sweet little dog. And I said, well, I'll go get it and I'll come train it, just spin it up a little bit so it has a companion. And if he has something that he'll take care of, and he'll take care of himself, and he'll move his own self forward in his life and not be a distraction and not self-medicate and actually talk and use his words and not just sit around and sulk, then we'll move forward with a service dog when he's ready. And that's how that started.
And ironically, the second dog with Battleground 22 was a big emergency too, wasn't it? We needed to get somebody right away for Pablo.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Pablo was another dear friend. I'd previously trained a pet for him. He called me one day and said, hey, dude, I'm heartbroken. My dog just died of cancer. I said, what are you talking about? He said, I went to the vet, and it's over. It's done. They just, he's gone. And I said, well, let me fix that for you. So we gave him something to look forward to. All these guys that have trouble, some of it is they need an immediate intervention to whatever that problem is. And some of it is just as simple as, hey, I need a goal. What is going to happen? What can you do? How can we get this done? And then they can stay focused on the, you know, we refer to it as an objective. What are we going to accomplish? And how do I need to, what steps do I need to do to achieve this objective? And we give them hope, I guess, is the way to say it.
I would agree. I see a lot of hope in the guys that come to us and the gals when they see their dogs or know they're on the list and they're moving up the list. That's pretty incredible. So how many service dogs have you trained all together, would you say? Just guess.
I've thought about it, and I wish I'd I wish I knew the exact number. It's in the 90s. Like I want to know who 100 is. So I really need to sit down and try to figure that out. I know we've done almost 60 with Troops First. We've done 7 or 8 or whatever, 5 or 6 or whatever it was with another organization. And we've done, 4 or 5 now with Battleground. But I've done probably a dozen independently where Worcester Marine Corps Super 5 Foundation has paid for one. We've done, I had a private donor out of Texas pay for 2. So that one of those went to a guy in Texas. One of them went to a guy in Arkansas. I'm guessing it's probably close to 90 or more. I just don't remember. I mean, at this point, it was just, we tried to do 10 or 12 or 13 or a year, and it was, they kind of bleed together over 13 years, unfortunately.
We all know how important service dogs are, but essentially that's 90 lives. That's a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, obviously there's been several guys that have told stories. I think the one that pops in my head when you say that, it's like, Anthony Fossey up in New York, New Jersey. He didn't have his dog long, and the dog woke him up barking and raising cane, and they had a house fire.
Oh my gosh.
So he didn't do anything specific other than, hey, there's some stuff going on, y'all need to get up. And so he quite possibly saved the entire family. That's how they feel, and I don't not disagree. We didn't train him to do that. That's just natural. Right? That was just something he did as a bonus.
What breed dog was he?
He was a German Shepherd.
We'll talk about that in a little bit too. So how many service dogs do you think you train yearly?
Well, right now we're probably down to, I would say down, but 8 or so a year is about a good number. We have a specific timetable of how we want to treat the animals and how we want them to grow and develop and when they're ready and how much home time they have to have. So it's not a rush. This is not a money-making scheme of any sort. So the more you could do, obviously the more funds are out there, the more funds we have, but that's not what it's about.
We do quality, not quantity.
Yes.
I would agree.
People's lives depend on it, so we train them as such.
Good point. So what breeds do you use for service dogs?
Obviously, the German Shepherd, the Belgian Malinois, and the Dutch Shepherd are the top 3 herding dogs, right? So we've used all 3 of those breeds. We've did a Great Pyrenees. I guess technically that ended up being a therapy dog for a department in Ohio. We did a German Short-haired Pointer as a facility dog up in Ashwaubenon. So,
Giant Schnauzer.
Giant Schnauzer. Yeah, he was cool. I love that dude. He's a good dog. Yeah, so I'm not restricted. I'll do whatever. I have a niche with the Shepherd. I have a niche with the Malinois when it's the right temperament. But I don't care. I'll train anything. I'll train a possum. I don't care.
Primarily working dogs, though.
Yeah, I'd rather do a working dog than a possum.
So where do the dogs come from?
I prefer my company, our company, her company. I'm just an employee. I prefer to get them from overseas, from Europe. We have built a huge relationship with friends and family over there. I'd say they're my family. We spend a lot of time with those guys, and they know exactly what I want as far as a temperament and a demeanor and a personality. And so it's much easier for us to select that. There's no motive. There's no scheme or conniving. It's all about, they understand where they're going, and they understand what is necessary. And so it's a relationship that has been long bearing and, you know, longly prosperous. So I would rather do that than, yeah, that word, it works.
We should have blocked Jeremy.
Jeremy's like, I want a possum.
No, your wife says it's okay.
We hosted our vendors over here in the U.S. so that they'd understand what we had to offer, our training capabilities, our training techniques, so that, you know, when we told them exactly what it was we were looking for, we would get just that. And they take personal ownership in it, because it's not like here, pet training, dog breeding, it's a hobby in the US. There, it's a legacy. Their name's attached to it. They like to follow the stories of where the dogs go. They take a personal interest into it. It's not just a money scheme for them. It's their life. It's their legacy. So I think that sets, like, in the US, it's way different. So that's what helps too. And they're, the way that the Europeans choose to breed, it's not just line breeding and, you know, whatever. They're truly breeding great genetics.
Well, and I feel like, and I'm not trying to offend anybody in the United States at all, but we are busy. We're busy people. We have kids. We have jobs that last long, that are long hours. And we have other hobbies and other interests that drive us as a human population. Not that the Europeans don't, because they do, but they get off of work and they go dog train until midnight or 10 o'clock at night. And then they go to bed and they go back to work and they do it again. They live for it. The ones that still do it and do it with a supreme passion. And we don't have the time or the effort. I don't personally. I work 12, 13 hours a day, and I don't want to spend 8 hours with a puppy. I'd rather farm with my hands.
We're going to talk about no tractors. Later.
I don't want puppies. I don't want puppies. You won't do puppy with me. I won't train your puppy to be a service dog. No. It's too much work.
Because
there's a year and a half of us just banging our head on the floor. Yeah. When I can take a 14, 15, 16, 18-month-old, 2-year-old dog and turn it into the thing it's supposed to be, it wants to be, not hope a puppy gets there someday.
Right. And we're going to talk more about
trust me.
Puppies and choosing and all that other stuff. But wouldn't you say Europe's, it's generational? They've been doing this a lot longer than us. They've been producing a working line dog for a whole lot longer than the United States has. So it's the
family legacy.
Right. Yep. And the caliber of animal that we're getting is completely different.
Correct.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Another
struggle bus for me is we possibly can't say that we don't have the same possibilities. This is why it hurts. We have all their dogs here. We buy in America, we buy hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dogs from European countries. Why can't we do it ourselves? And there are some guys that you may jump on here and say, hey, we do it. We have 50. We have 150 in our kennel. Come buy some. Okay, cool. Love you. That's a lot of work. Nice work. I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not going to do it. I'm too old.
I did puppies. Puppies are disgusting. It's not worth it. Plus, they're constantly changing. Every week, the blue collar is dominant this week, and the yellow collar is dominant next week. And it's not the same. They've established a puppy program to train to mitigate environmentals and develop far better than anything I've ever seen in the U.S. The Air Force tried to do it, but still. Well,
they're still doing it, but I've got plenty of friends that work there. Somebody jump on here and correct me if I'm wrong. Please do, because I don't mean any harm. Is the success rate more than 35%? I bet it's not. I bet you $1,000. It might be 37, but it's not much. It's less than 50. They have litters after litter of puppies, and to augment the importation of the European bloodline. They went and bought bloodline from Europe. We started a puppy program. They got this fancy book. They got doctors. They got psychiatrists. They got all the resources available, and the success rate is probably under 40%, no doubt. So what do you do with all this rest of them? You put them in a adoption process, and people are lined up for miles, not literally, but there's probably a 2-year wait to get a military working dog that has been retiring out for lack of production or because his career is over with. And I could talk about that for hours, but the point is this, the success rate is not as successful as if I imported 20, I'm going to get 19 of those to work or 18 of those to work, not 9. Or if I do 9, then Tiff's going to kill me. Because we lost a bunch of money.
So Battleground's often approached by breeders that want to donate a puppy to our service dog program. And we've So other than the logistics of, it's a generous offer. I don't mean to laugh at that. But other than the logistics of homing, raising, feeding, vetting, waiting for the maturity of them to go into service, let's talk a little bit about what you're looking for in an animal and how would you ever ascertain that in a young puppy?
Well, let's do this first. So to limit, because everybody thinks, okay, we're going to talk about pricing later, but we'll cut to the chase. It costs $15,000 for a fully trained service dog. That's what I'm going to charge you, $15,000. Not a dime less, maybe not a dime more if I can help it. But if you give me a puppy, okay, and it takes up a space in my building, right? So we'll do the cheapest rate, $25. That's a room I can't rent. It's a room I can't put a police dog in. It's a room I can't put another service dog in. That's a room I can't use. So that's times $30. That's $750 a month. Right? Is that a good math?
Yep.
Times 12. That's $9,000 just in housing I lose because a dog sits here.
Now
it's going to take me more than a year. It's going to take me a year and a half, probably a year and 3 months. So we're looking at another $2,000 to $3,000. So I have $11,000 minimum just in housing cost that you got to pay me on top of the training.
Not including food, water, electricity, or any type of labor, because we have to train it and labor dollars count. If you look in the grand scheme of things, everything has a dollar associated with it. So once you start breaking down the cost, from a 500-foot view and a 5,000-foot view, it's not cost-effective as a company.
So the people that want to give a service to a puppy so we can turn it into it, their heart's in the right place. Their heart is, hey, we have this dog. We'd love for you to have it, and please train it for a veteran. That would be awesome. Well, I would have to have technically that's going to call. I've used space, so I lost that money. But I also need a person, not her, not me, because we're busy with other tasks. So I need a person that I'm paying $50,000 a year. That's his job, is to play with that puppy. So now I got his payroll tied up in that action as well. And I would be better served for you to call us back at when the dog's 12 months old, 13, 14, 15 months old, and then we can evaluate the temperament.
Yes.
Then we can talk about what you want us to talk about now, which is what do we want the dog to be able to do and how do we want
because
to
act? Because that's the other side of it. Is a lot of people think, it's a nice puppy. Let's make it a service dog. Not every dog has the capabilities or the ability to be trained for the specific traits that are required to be a service dog. Just because it's a sweet puppy this week doesn't mean in 2 months it's not going to be. Some dogs are just slow learners and don't have the ability to do some of the things that are required as a service dog. So just because it's a dog and it's a specific breed doesn't mean it can be a service dog. A lot of people think it's a German Shepherd. It can be a, you know, police dog. It can be a service dog. It can be whatever. It does not work. That's not a thing. It all, just like if I want my daughter to be a doctor, she has to want it. I can't make her want to do it. And if the dog doesn't possess the drive, the characteristics or traits, it's never going to happen.
They have to have a propensity for it, just like the personal protection dogs, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which you get a lot of questions about too.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about, there are a lot of organizations out there, and I'm not criticizing anybody, that train rescue dogs.
Yes.
We'll take them from the Humane Society or a shelter, and we'll train them and we'll put them in a home as a service dog. Let's talk a little bit about, why don't you train rescue dogs and how that works?
We've done a few, like very select, and I'm going to be very selective, not because I don't think that's a worthy cause, because those dogs have been discarded from wherever. And so the ultimate dilemma for me is, what is the full medical breakdown of this dog? How old is this thing really? And unfortunately, the truth is the truth. How did it get there?
Why?
Why did it get there? What did it do? Now, it could be neglect. could be just the fact that it was born on the street and it's raised on its own, and it's got the self-preservation skill set for that dog is amazing, but that doesn't translate to a nice service dog. That doesn't translate always to
not a great, in our company's platform.
Well, at the end of the day, if I take that dog and we take that dog and we put our name on it, we train it and we put it in somebody's hands, my insurance is liable for what it does next. And that's a big push for me. Like, what does this dog have a capability of doing? Where did it come from? And what pushes it? What drives it? What drives do it have? And if it's loaded with fear or loaded with anxiety, that's not a good opportunity for me.
What are the triggers? You never know.
So we're very, very particular when I look. And I love the Dodge County Humane Society. I love Fond du Lac County Humane Society. I have a good relationship with both of those directors.
Strong supporters.
And yep. I love them. We just went to their fundraiser and I made an ass out of myself. Sorry. Sorry, Facebook. I don't think we can do that on Facebook. So I might have drank too much. Sorry.
Might have.
Yeah. I had too many.
14.
Anyway. So going back to,
yes.
And the other thing is, like, we just looked at a dog for one of our veterans, right? We thought she would be a great fit, and then her health x-rays came back and they were not a good fit. So when you look at rescue dogs versus the dogs that we're getting overseas, let's talk about that.
I'm glad you brought that up, because there's another avenue. When we're dealing with a opportunity to help a dog get out of the rescue and then provide a job for him, we don't have x-rays. That's not available. Now, it doesn't mean I can't go get them done, but what's the cost analysis for that? $300 or $400 for a set of x-rays, and I don't like them, or vet doesn't like them, or the foundation doesn't want to spend, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 for me to train it. And it has a weak elbow
hereditary problem that only lasts, the dog only lasts a year. Then we're responsible to replace that dog at full replacement value cost.
And obviously this looks like a money chaser, right? But how's that fair to the veteran?
If they only get the dog for a year.
It's not necessarily a money chaser when we're raising funds and we're asking and we're going to our audience and we're saying, we need, now thank you for that $5,000 or that $15,000, but now we need another $15,000 because we made a bad choice.
Sure. Yeah. I want to avoid that like COVID.
Right. Exactly.
I don't want it.
So let's also then talk about, can you take a family dog and make it a service dog?
It goes back to the same principles. Does it possess the qualities and traits and characteristics to be able to complete the tasks that are required for that specific disability?
Well, yes. All that is, that's a textbook answer. But at the same time, if I had a nice house dog, why am I giving it up? Like, I gave mine away, but I got it back. I loaned it. I was a loaner. That's always the trick is, and everybody could have a heart that, hey, that I want this to go to someone nice. I don't care for it. I work 12 hours a day. My wife's, you know, in the hospital, or she's bedridden or whatever. There could be every situation is going to be unique, and I don't mind having those conversations, but I'm frank with people. Like, I don't wave a wand and it just becomes a service dog. There's got to be work involved, and it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of commitment. And if the dog can't make it, then do you come get it? Or am I stuck with it? What do I do with it then? And I don't take dogs to the main site and drop them off. I've never done that. Never going to do that. Now, we've only sent dogs back to Europe once in 9 years, and well, twice. And I don't even like doing that. I like trying to find what, every dog can be trained to something. Not all can be service dogs. So that's what this is about. Right? Right. So
going back to the breeds that you do choose primarily, being the Shepherds and the Dutchies and the Malinois, all working dogs, tell us what a working dog is, please.
Well, so I'll tell you a tiny story, and I'll try to make it, you know, see, it takes only 20 minutes. So when we were where we were before, everybody sent an email. We should get, after the TV show would air, active dogs, geez Louise.
Alpha dogs
would air on Nat Geo Wild on Friday night. When I got to work Monday morning, my computer would be inundated with 100 emails. My dog's a working dog. My dog's a working dog. You need
my
to come get
my dog needs
it.
A job.
He chases tennis ball for hours. He's amazing. You should come get him and make a police dog out of him. And I would compile those, and we had already Tiffany and I had sat down and wrote a snippet for a German Shepherd, a snippet for a Doberman, a snippet for a Australian Shepherd, or whatever. It was, we wrote everything you could think of, like, right now we don't need it, but whatever. It was real sweet. We tried to be really genuine with our answers. But the list became so long, the emails became so thick, that we went to our boss and he said, maybe we should go take a look. So they put a training group together, not me and Tiffany. They put another group together with a van and they said, go look at them. Go get with Jesse, get the emails, go get, do a little round robin, drive all over the United States. We brought back two dogs. Two.
That didn't train out either.
And neither one of them made it to a class. Uh-uh. Like, so what, when I say a working dog, I mean something that has so much drive that you, it's an aggravating in your house. It's chewing your shoes. It's chewing your pants when you walk around. It's messing your furniture up. It has to be doing.
You need to rephrase that because there is a lot of dogs that chew stuff and tear things up. No,
but it has to be doing something. It has this sole purpose is destruction, even when you're looking at it.
So we're talking about police dogs.
No, well, we're just talking about what's a working dog? She said, "What's a working dog?
Yeah,
like a dog that wants to do work.
It fetches
for hours. Just yeah. It has just a motor that's unbelievable. You go to the bathroom and it's like, la, we're going to town. Let's go. You can't go to the bathroom without it looking at you. Well, you can give your definition of working dog. Go ahead. Some of the what you're thinking is everybody's gonna be like, I got working dogs.
Exactly.
It tears my house up.
That's all I can think of is people are like, oh, my dog's a working dog. Nope, it's not.
It's just a butthole.
Probably not. It just has no obedience and it lacks social skills.
Well, we can fix that too sometimes.
Yes.
So when they have, let's talk about drive. Like, what is drive and why is that important to service dogs?
So drive in general, there's hundreds of them, but it's a subconscious impulse to do something genetically that they're predisposed to do. That could be prey drive, like it fetches things and grabs it. It could be ball drive, where they just like retrieving. They like to hunt. You can throw it and hide it from them, and they don't stop looking for it until they find it or until they pass out. So there's multitude of different drives that are available out there or that dogs have. But primarily, we're going to be looking at hunt and prey and retrieval and activity drive. Like a dog just has an endless block of energy that we can use. I need something that the dog has internally that I can use as a motivation tool. I can motivate him to do a specific thing. Like, for instance, if a dog likes to chase a ball. Okay, cool. I play ball with him until I change the ball to a remote. Now he'll pick the remote up and bring a remote back. Now I can change that to keys. Now I can change that. I can change that to his medicine bottle. Hey, I need that off the counter. Go get it. Go get my medicine. Yeah, good boy. So we use that drive, that internal mechanism that I have to go get that. I don't have a choice. We get calls all the time. Hey, can you make my dog fetch? No, if he don't fetch, he ain't going to fetch.
Yeah.
I can't pour it in. I can't give it to him. I can pour it out. I can use it to do something with it, but I can't give it to him. I can't be like, okay, you're going to fetch stuff now. That's not how it works. He has to want to fetch. That's my little fairy dust. Sorry, I get fired up.
Nope, it's okay. But it leads us to what kind of services do the dogs provide veterans? Like, what are you training them to do?
Well, obviously, without getting into everyone's medical conditions, right? You can have a seizure alert dog, which we've done. You can have a diabetic alert dog for your high and low blood sugars. You can have, obviously, a dog that helps someone who has trouble seeing or is completely blind. That's not for me. I don't think I have the patience to work on a dog like that or probably I don't even think I've got the skills for it, honestly. I think that would be really tough. Probably got to have a minimal drive for that kind of dog because he can't be chasing balls, right? Cause he drags his owner out in the middle of the traffic. So that would not be good. And that's probably where I'd screw that up. Why are you laughing?
I am not laughing.
All right. So
I'm just thinking
we already highlighted a little bit, picking up medicine bottles, right? And I made a list here for us to have on. So I wrote task. Here's some tasks for you. Dog can do. Retrieve items from the ground. I kind of highlighted already. Keys, remote, cell phone, whatever, anything. Money, you drop the change, pick my quarter up, get it back to me. I'm broke. Help somebody up the stairs, like counterbalance them, help them pull upstairs.
Mobility support.
Yep. Some of this could be construed as an emotional support type aspect, but
that's my next question, actually. Yep.
And so
don't jump ahead.
Well, no, service dogs can do some of those taskers, but it's a different kind of dog. But you could have help you distract you from what's going on around you, like interaction. The dog can sense the frustration.
Let me stop you just a second. Yep. A lot of the veterans that come to us have invisible.
Yes.
Right? PTSD, MST, which is military sexual trauma, if you're not aware of that. So how are we training the dogs for this, and how are they helping our veterans with these invisible things?
So we, part of our process, whether it's with Troops First or whether it's with Battleground 22, is to ask the question, like, you want to be normal, right? But your normal is different than mine. And I can't see all of those things. So we want to have honest and complete dialogue. Like, what are your struggles? And how can this dog alleviate some of those struggles? If it's mostly mental, then we can help with that. A dog can tell when you're frustrated. We all have personal dogs sometimes you'll be left alone, and they don't want you to be left alone because they can tell you're in a bad mood. So they're bothering you. And sometimes that frustrates you more, but it gets you off of whatever's on your mind. Whatever your stress level is, it alleviates it. So we want to have honest dialogue with all of our people and go, what is it that you struggle with? And then we figure out how to make the dog understand that and alleviate some of those struggles, whether it's mobility issues, whether that's stress-related, whether that's, I mean, again, the list, if you look up service dog capabilities, there's 200 things the dog can do. I just want to know what are the four or five most important for you or them, and then we make sure that happens. Good?
Yep. I'm thinking hard about some of our veterans and how I've talked to some of the families, some of those families from Troops First veterans, and it never fails to amaze me how many times I hear the dogs are saving lives. Yep. So we're very casually talking about, let me know what these five things are, that those are life-saving things in manners that the rest of us don't necessarily understand unless we've been through their battles and their stories and all that other stuff. So I wanted to spend just a second on that to talk about how important it is that they are.
Shortly after the dogs are united with their new human, we hear stories of how the dogs have already begun to change lives. We've seen a decrease in opioids. We've seen people be able to finally sleep through the night.
That's probably your number one right off the bat. Like, the first night, it's like, I haven't slept that good in X days, yeah, or X months or X years. Like, they just relax, and the dog provides comfort.
Dogs understand behavior. They understand body language. If they can sense a high and low in blood pressure and blood sugar, you're telling me they can't sense when your anxiety is through the roof, when you're upset, when you're sad, happy, mad, all these things. And I think dogs pick up on it so fast that's what makes a lot of the pairing successful, is the dogs understand it on a different level, something that Jesse and I can't even understand.
Rick is one of our veterans, and he's commenting on how Kimbo is impacting his life. And he says, Kimbo looks after me when I have a disassociative episode related to PTSD, and he can sometimes forget where he's at. And I'm reading this in case when we do it for Dogs and Divas later, people sure can't read the comments. He forgets where he's at, and he's under high stress. He notices that nightmares are way down too. I'm sure there are other veterans, if you're comfortable talking about, you know, the impact that your service dogs have had on you. It's imperative to those that are watching that don't understand where they fit in your lives and how they help with your healing or coping process.
I'll try to tell this story 2 minutes worth of it, and I'll make it where I don't try to cry, hopefully. But Chuck, what was Chuck's last name? Not Chuck. Chuck was Marco Robel. And I probably pronounced his last name wrong, and I apologize, Marco. But Marco called. It was a Troop's first dog. And Marco, I got in touch with Marco, and he said, Rick's like, hey, this is a double amputee. He's missing his right arm, left arm, and left leg. So you need to talk to him about what he wants his dog to do. So I get Marco on the phone, and Marco's like, I want the dog to open the door. I want him to close the door. I'm going to turn the lights on. I want him to let himself outside to pee, come back inside and close the door. Like he's got all these things he wants the dog to do. And I'm like, well, those are all service oriented things to help me, pull me in the wheelchair, like all kind of stuff. I get off the phone, open the, hit the
handicap
doors and all this stuff. And I'm like, I get the phone. I'm like, I look at Tip. I was like, this dude wants like a serious ass service dog. I said, but this is going to be tough. This is going to be a tough one. And so we started. She made me little silver buttons out of
handicap plates,
cardboard handicap buttons with wrapped in tinfoil. And I put them on every tree around this property. Mm-hmm. And I would go up to him and I go touch, and he would jump up there and hit the button, and we hit the fake button. And then I took him to town and had whatever. So we got it done. And the point was, as Marco said, I live in a wheelchair. I'm in a wheelchair at home. And I get out of the bed, get in my wheelchair, and then I go to school or I go to work. And then I go back home and I get out of my wheelchair and I lay on the bed or I lay on the couch. That's all I do. So he shows up to get his dog and I pick him up at the airport. And these guys are, you know, the airline assistance crew is bringing him to me, and he's in a wheelchair. And I could tell real quick that something looked different. I'm like, why is he in a, like, when these guys are injured like that, they get aircraft aluminum. They're real light wheelchair that they can maneuver because their body weight, and they don't want to. Especially in his case, he's got one arm and one leg. So as they get closer, I can tell it's a regular wheelchair for the family, like for a family wheelchair at a hospital. And he gets all the way to me, and he reaches out, and he shakes my hand, and he stands up because he had his prosthetic leg on. And he had a prosthetic arm on that had like a paddle on the other side. And I said, what are you doing? What you got going on here, buddy? He said, Jesse, when I got the phone with you 3 months ago, I said, what kind of guy am I going to be to get a dog and just lay in a bed? He said, I've been running 3Ks and 5Ks. I've been active. I want this dog, and I want it to be active with me. And I'm like, so the dog saved him before he got him.
Oh, jeez.
And he travels all over the world with that dog. He's been to Mexico. He's taken him to resorts. The dog's probably 12 or 13 now, and is probably coming to the end. But that dog has got him out and got him some girlfriends and all kind of stuff. he's a good dude and has a great dog. I like him. So that's just another way they save them before they even get them.
Give them a reason to get up and get going.
Yeah. We have some veterans in the queue. I'm so anxious to see where they are in like 6 or 9 months.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Yeah. I literally can't wait. Some of our veterans are on and they're commenting again, and I just want to do it for the sake of the podcast. Brian just received a phenomenal mail. She's like the sweetest thing I've ever seen. She's such a character. Her name's Roxy. And Brian says, I don't have hyper awareness issues like I used to just by Roxy's presence. She watches my back so people can't sneak up behind me. And I'll tell you a funny story about that. And startle me makes me being out in public completely different. Rick says it makes it easier to leave the house. One of the first veteran games that we attended, Jim, my better half, walked up behind Jason Hewitt with Rex.
Yeah.
Rex just has to look at you and you tremble. Rex turned around and looked at Jim, and I thought, oh my goodness, what's happening? And Jim was oblivious to it, and Rex kept turning around, and Jason was so in tune to Rex. He finally just was like, what is your problem? And then he looked at him locking in on Jim, and he said, dude, he does not like you sneaking up behind me. So it was nice to see Jason being comfortable with people coming up behind him, because sure. That is something yep. that we talk about too. So, yep. Okay. All right. We've talked a lot about some of the things that they can do. What would you say that they can't do? What can these dogs, is there any limitations to what they can do?
Our imagination, Okay. Honestly, they're smarter than we are. They're damn sure smarter than me, right? So at the end of the day, even with our law enforcement side of what we do, I talk about all the time, like the training is our imagination. How much we want to do, what you need from them is all pertains to how much you want to try. That's really it. And how do you get the task across to them? They'll do anything you want them to do. They dang sure will.
Do anything for love.
Yeah. But, well, they need food, water, air, and attention.
Right.
And they're getting air quite freely. Right. So food and water and your love, and they'll do whatever you want them to do.
So the service dogs are with the veterans 24/7, correct?
Yes.
Are they family dogs?
Yes, they can be family dogs. Yep. Yep, absolutely. And they can mingle with other families. We get information all the time, like, hey, if I have dogs already, how's that going to work? And is it better to start with a puppy because I want my kids to be around it? These dogs, again, food. Who's giving me food? Who's giving me water? Who's loving on me? That person I will literally die for. So they'll do whatever they want. They'll do whatever you want them to do within reason based on those three factors. Like, so they bleed in with the family pretty well. And that comes back down to, is it the right temperament, right demeanor, right drive, right dog for the right situation? And we've been pretty good about that. Right?
Yep.
We've been pretty successful. And if we don't, we know it pretty fast. And then we fix it.
Josh, you just commented, and I was going to actually refer to you. I think you had Max or Chase. Your little one calls him Chase.
From Paw Patrol.
From Paw Patrol, right? For probably about a week, and we got that picture of them laying on the couch,
yep.
The three of them. And he's what, three, his little one, I think?
Yes.
Maybe three,
yeah,
or four?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Two. He might be three.
Yeah,
I don't think
he's
a little
guy.
Yeah.
So the service dogs often go into homes with children of all different ages. And the job for the service dog is to help them acclimate, not just in the home, but outside the home. So they have to be good with all different ages. I just wanted to bring that up. But Josh, I want to talk about what Rick says. Rick said, I was a year into recovery when I got Kimbo. I wasn't suicidal at that point, but I was in something like purgatory. Kimbo's energy took me to thriving and looking forward to being here. Rick, we're glad you're here. Josh says, my depression and PTSD was horrible. I hated going places and I would sit inside all the time. Max, aka Chase, has changed that in 2 weeks. I've lived a better life with Max. My family love having him in the house, in the household, as well as having saved us all. Brian says that Roxy's integrated with three other dogs and three other cats with zero issues. So let's talk a little bit about when we have veterans come to us. What is an ideal family setting and what is not maybe an ideal family setting for a service dog? Because we have to turn down some applications, right?
Sure. Well, obviously
there's reasons for that.
Obviously the most difficult is when you have the multiple other dogs or other animals or other things in the house, right? Because at the end of the day, this dog is supposed to provide a task. Task oriented. It's all a service dog is supposed to be doing something for you to mitigate your medical conditions, something that you can't do without it.
Physical disability.
Yep. And so when you have other animals that can distract the dog, even if that's kids, right? Kids, I mean, we want to be a family dog, so don't mishear what I'm not saying. But those are the most difficult because then the dog can't always do its job. Hence the reason why when you see a service dog in town, you're not supposed to call it to you and want to go pet it because it may be a diabetic alert dog or a seizure dog and it's not your business to find out. What does this dog do? None of your business. It's a service dog. Let him be. Let him mind his business and do his job. Anyway, what's difficult about those multiple kid families and multiple dog families is it makes it harder for us to pick the right dog that can tolerate that and still perform his job or her job. So that ideally, not that I want all single males or single females, but it makes our selection process more difficult because we have to be more in tune to what this dog.
We have to proof them around all the different things to make sure they can still comprehend the tasks and complete the tasks to make it a safe environment and made a successful pairing so that it helps the disability and not hinders it.
And difficult can mean time-consuming. Time-consuming while the vet waits as
correct.
You try to find
correct.
A dog that's suitable.
Also, right. There's a fancy term called spontaneous recovery. It's like the dog gets in a house with a with other dogs that are not trained or have bad behavior, then all, before you know it, the new dog that has been trained learns bad behavior. And then we have to go mitigate that, fly back down. We've flown to places before to fix issues, whether that was other dog related or just because bad behavior presented itself when it wasn't supposed to.
So that leads me to, what kind of aftercare do they get when you're talking about flying down? It's not like the veterans are picking up the dogs and we'll see you later. It's none of that.
No. And there's obviously there's programs that do it different. And so we feel like our program is efficient and effective. So we do a 4-day turnover. That 4 days incorporates you coming to me or us and stay in here 1 or 2 to 3 full days. And then we get on a plane and fly home with you. And we integrate the dog into the home, into the other family members. And we stay the night. And then we come back the next day if necessary. Or go, you know, maybe we stayed 5 days. But it's a 4-day process minimum. And that's how we like to do it. Doesn't mean it has to be that way. Most everybody comes flying to us. We have flown that to them and just did it in-house. But if the dog's going to be doing any kind of travel, then we want to make sure we're the first ones on a plane with it. Not everybody has that opportunity. Like we didn't do that with Roxy because he drove up and he drove down. And so we worked it out. But we were on standby. So that's the other part. We started this conversation. Well, when are we available? Right now. Like if there's a problem right now, I want to know. I want to know it's not doing X, Y, or Z immediately so we can mitigate that by phone call, by video, or by face-to-face contact.
I remember having that conversation with Brian and I said, you guys are available 24/7 and don't wait.
I don't need a list. She's doing X, 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 X. That's too late. I want to know the dog did X and Y. Yeah. And then let's get a plan together.
Exactly.
I flew to DC last week.
Yeah.
You what?
I flew to DC last week.
That's right.
To deliver a dog after she was here for a week or 5 days.
I'm so sorry.
You're fine.
God forbid, what happens if something goes sideways with a service dog in a veteran's home? Have you ever had to remove a dog? Under what circumstances might you need to do that? And who owns the dog? I mean, it's not as if the dogs disappear, like I mentioned before.
Sure.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
So there could be a wide-ranging reasons why a dog would be removed. One, your... personally, the veteran is not stable anymore. Mm-hmm. He or she is back to in a bad spot mentally and physically. Maybe we're using self-medicating again, and that's so there's some healing needs to be done, and by professionals, not by me. Like the dog is not. So let's just clear this up before we get to the dog. Doesn't fix problems. It doesn't change what is going on internally. There needs to be professional help for that. The dog, we don't want the dog to be a problem, but it doesn't fix problems. Now it can mitigate some minor things and help you live a better life, but it's not a fix all. It's not just like, oh, I'm screwed up, so I need a dog, and then we're gonna be good. That's not how it works. So things that could happen could be that a veteran could be using alcohol or drugs again. We could have a situation where lose a job and I can't afford to even pay my bills, much less pay for dog food and vet care. In all of our cases where the foundation is gifting this dog to you, they are technically the owners. So Battleground would own any dog they purchase from us to give to someone. Same as Troops First. And at the last resort is to remove a dog from the home. But if you can't care for it anymore, or it's being bad, or it's the wrong dog, so I picked the wrong dog for you, and it's not conducive to your family atmosphere and your workload, and you want to be a homebody and just chill, and it's an active dog, and it wants to go run marathons twice a week, then we'll just take that back. We'll replace it. If it's the dog is the issue and you are still stable and you're still ready to move forward with your life, then we'll find the right dog for you. If it's the other way around, then you potentially couldn't get it back. But there have been situations where gentlemen have fell off the wagon or had to go back to rehab or had to go to wherever. And we got the dog back here, retrained it, gave it some additional services. And then when that person was ready, we reintegrated it just like we did the first, yeah. Beginning.
One of the things we talked about is how do you ensure they get proper care and training? And obviously they're coming loaded. They're ready to go. We want the communication open. But talk about maybe the veteran games that happen every August and sure. how TIFF then gets to assess dogs as they come in and the veterans and how they're working and how you get to do that.
So obviously that is the perfect opportunity for us. You get this dog, and then every August, and we have for 9 years now, this will be our 8th year having it here. We had it 1 year in Indiana. It's our 9th opportunity for you to bring the dog back and, for lack of better words, compete in 12 events. Actually, I think we do only do 8 events in that one. We do 12 for the law enforcement guys. We do 8 for the service dog competition. And that's bragging rights, but it's also an opportunity for us. If the dog's excelling and doing really good, that's great. It's wonderful. But if he's not doing great, we get to see that, and then we can make it a training week or training 3 days, and we can fix some of the issues that may or may be having it. The dog might be having.
We're distracted by the werewolf. I know. I hear the
howl. Yeah, it's a great opportunity for us to see all the teams, how they're working conducively with each other. It lets us see who's lacking. All of our events are their fancy way of looking at how we certify anyway. I mean, we look at food refusal, distractions, obedience, obstacles, everything like that. So we've
loud
got
noises,
our
distractions.
Yeah. Loud. Yeah. So we put a twist on everything so that we can see all the things that we expect the dog to do, and we can ensure that the team is successfully functioning as a great pair in unison. And it allows us the opportunity to be able to take, the team aside and work on anything individually just so that they can stay at the top of their performance. And so that the dog is, a successful service dog and not just a pet.
And just, it's a great time for TIFF to say your dog's getting fat.
Yes, I will fat shame a dog because I'm an advocate for a dog.
Exactly.
I don't want to hurt your feelings, but if it happens, it happens. And the dog can't say, yo, I'm fat. But I can, and I will, because that will make the dog healthy and live a long time. We don't want overweight, fat dogs.
Exactly. So, all right. We talked a little bit about certification. Can you tell me what is certification and expound upon that a little bit?
Well, so we always get asked, what is a certification? And there's not a national standard. You can get on the computer right now and type in service dog requirements, and you can go buy you a name badge and a sticker. And the ADA law is very specific. You don't have to have a dude like me or Tiffany. Well, I'm a dude. She's a chick. But you don't have to have one of us train your dog. You can train it yourself, so you can be self-trained.
You can self-certify a service dog.
Yeah. So what we try to do is do something very specific, which the government has decided that Assistance Dogs International is the standard for what a service dog capabilities are, how it should act and perform. So we're not affiliated with them. They're not affiliated with us. They don't know who we are. But we take that, take their standard, and we use it as a measuring stick for our dogs. I don't have a dog that can't pass that test with flying colors 100%, period, end of discussion. Because we train it to make sure.
We feel that's top of the line standard. So we train every dog to a minimum of the standards of the test so that we know that they're performing. Because if we feel that's the gold line standard, that if each dog can hit those marks, that's a really annoying dog. Each dog can hit that mark, then we know that the dogs will be golden anywhere else.
In a nutshell, what that is in addition to its skills, it has a duty to perform for the handler. Whatever those medical needs are, it has to ride in a car without interfering with the driver. When the driver gets where he's going, handler opens the door, he's got to stay in the car until it's asked to get out. When it gets out, it immediately goes to the sit. You recover leash, harnesses, whatever you're going to use, and then it walks inside whatever business or restaurant or establishment you're going to in a polite manner, not being distracted by cars and buggies and people and noise.
Other dogs that are wearing service vests that really might not be a service dog.
Yeah. And then behave the entire time going through doors, wait its turn.
This is the guideline for public access.
Yeah. And
restaurants, buildings.
Not being a burden in those places and then returning back in the opposite direction. And is there some food refusals? There's some, if your handler leaves you, does it stay or does it whine and run and go look for you?
How to greet people.
Can somebody else take the dog while you walk away? There's a bunch of things that's in there. It's 8 pages worth of stuff. And we make sure we hit every one of those thoroughly. In addition to the other on and off leash obedience that's already been provided by us, we just hit that as well.
So we're talking about having the service dogs in public. Where can they go and where can't they go?
A service dog can go just about anywhere. Well, anywhere, technically. It just has to do a task for you. And if it does a task that's medically required, that's medically needed, it can't be denied. And you don't have to give everybody a bunch of details about what that is. They can ask you, is it a service dog? And what is the task that it does? What are you trained for? And you don't have to give your medical conditions out. You can just use one of the 6 or 4 or 5 or 8 or 9 things that we've trained it to do that you need it to do. Whether that's, like I wrote on here, one of the big ones that we get asked all the time is assist in changing and position change. I have difficulty getting out of this chair to the standing position. Cool. We can have the dog help you do that. That's a need that if not, you're going to come pick me up or get up from the laying position to the sit position. Help me move from point A to point B. So that's an easy one.
The other thing that someone can ask is to see a copy of the current shot record and requirements for that specific state. So that is one thing that you do have to keep on you at all times.
Well, every state has
its own requirements, yeah.
Correct. And when you travel, you're supposed to have a health certificate every time you travel for your dog. If you leave the state, you're supposed to have that. I'm just saying.
So we're going to change the subject just a tiny bit. What is an emotional support companion? Well, and how is that different than a service dog?
So a emotional support dog doesn't do anything but help you personally. Like it doesn't do any medical task. It doesn't do anything. No medical assess. No needs. It's just there for your emotional stability. Just for you to have a pet. It's basically a pet that has a little bit more skills, a little bit more obedience. Hopefully, right? But it's just it doesn't do anything.
Its primary function is to provide general emotional comfort to a handler only. Must be allowed to live with.
So you can look it down. They can see.
So.
Go ahead.
Must be allowed to live with owner even where it says no pets. I can't read.
Why are you trying?
It's so small. I'm so old. Josh. I can't see.
All right. So now we're going to go into more of Tiffany's area here. We're going to talk about the kind of care they require. I know you'll touch base on this, but
I'll take a two-minute break.
Passion, right? let's talk about their diet and toys, because we're often offered donations for and treats for both police canines, because we do gift baskets for the police canines, our veterans, and we're also offered toys. Or even food. Sometimes they want to do a food drive. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So for food, that's all going to be personal preference. I can't say for sure what would be a good food or a bad food. What I can say is a lot of people ask, how do you know what to feed the dog? Like what brands? And I mean, it's all going to be budget constraints, what your family can afford. The biggest thing is it has to be a proper balance of proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. And the amount of food you feed is based upon the weight, which is on the back of the bag. And that's at that weight the dog can properly digest that serving of carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. I don't feel that dogs should have treats. That's me personally. For me, treats are just empty carbohydrates, sugars, and processed ingredients that I don't feel it's necessary for a dog to have, and it just creates obese dogs.
What about fresh vegetables or people food that are healthy?
There are some people foods that dogs can have. Most dogs don't need it. If you feel absolutely necessary to treat your dog, then that's a personal thing. My fat wiener dog gets things, but that's because she's a fat wiener dog and I own monkeys and they drop food on the floor. So she's like my own personal Roomba that I don't have to recharge. But as far as toys...
Well, before you go there, let's talk about the police dogs and treats. People wanting to donate treats for the police dogs. Please
it's don't. Really, really unnecessary. These dogs don't need treats.
Or aren't they trained not to take treats then too? Some of them, I think.
Yes.
Waukesha County once said, no, we don't take any treats.
A lot of them have dietary issues. We've got a lot of dogs that have chicken allergies, and a lot of treats are based protein chicken. And it's just, we don't want fat dogs.
Well, sadly, people want to, I mean, I get it. Oh, he's so sweet. Can we give him a treat? It's a natural instinct. I want to give this dog something because I want him to be happy. The problem is the other issue is we don't know we trust people, but we don't know what's in the treat. We don't know how it's going to adversely affect his belly, which is what Tip started highlighting. And he has a job. And if he's not at 100%, then that will affect his work, which could ultimately cause someone to lose their life, right? So he's got to be at full capacity, full strength, and full mental and physical awareness.
If he's always looking around for treats, then he's going to be distracted and not doing what he's supposed to be doing. And every time he comes upon people, he's going to be going.
So when a service dog handler or a cop says, no, thank you, they don't mean any harm. They're looking out for their partner that needs to work next eight, 9, 10 years. And they need him to be in his peak physical conditioning at all times. That's why people think that police dogs are, he looks skinny. Well, he's an Olympic athlete. Okay, I'm not. I'm a fat old man. Right? I don't run anymore. Don't be smiling over there and laughing. They need to be in shape, not round. They need to be in shape to work. And so we like to see the last rib, maybe the last two, because he's running fast. He's running 27 miles an hour. Yeah. He's getting underneath cars. He's going through windows. He's chasing people through backyards, and he's saving the world. And he needs to be prepared for that.
You want a lean dog. We don't want a dog that's shaped like a sausage.
And a lot of these breeds tend to lean, lean. I know.
Right? treats are for the sheriff, not for the canines.
Exactly.
I love it.
Well, let's talk about toys. Because oftentimes people want to donate toys. And I don't know, in my personal experience, they're either soft and ripped up and gone, or they're breaking a tooth. And I don't want to risk either. I don't want to risk digesting something or ingesting something that they can't digest, or having to replace a tooth, which is really expensive.
So Jesse touched on it before. The dogs we use for all of our programs have extremely high drives. So when they get something they like, they try to destroy it. And if you give them a rope toy that's easily ingestible, which gives them a intestinal blockage or stomach protrusion, which is about a $3,700 surgery, Kongs and things like that.
Comments and laughing at that. I'm sorry. One of our law enforcement handlers said police dogs listen very well when they come back and listen to Jesse. We're going to talk about that question a little bit. Go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
But anything that they can rip apart, tear, or shred, even Kongs, a lot of times they'll eat that first tear off of it, and we've seen that in intestinal blockages.
I'm a big steward of other people's money too. Like, I spend my own personal money. Like, I don't have my checkbook is sparse. Tiff's probably got some money. Our company checkbook is fine, but the point I'm going here is simple. I don't want people to buy stuff that is pointless for the dogs. You're wasting your resources on things that are going to last 1.5 seconds, or we can't give them. I'm sorry. Like, so that's, we're not trying to be ugly. If you would want to give us something for the dogs, it has to be specific for a working dog. The Kongs, the Kong balls, anything super, super hard, and you're like, this is pointless. This thing is, nobody would like this. That's what he likes. And if you give me something else, your $24 is gone in a half of a second, and that's not fair to you.
Tiffany, how many calls have you taken with dogs that are having issues because they swallowed something that could kill them?
Oh, God.
Oh, that's a weekly occurrence. I mean, and that's pet dogs eating underwear. It's working socks. Dogs. Yeah, underwear, socks. We've had on drug sniffs, they've lapped up rat poison in a warehouse. Gosh. I mean, ingesting drugs, you name it.
I won't name the department, but one had I'm not discrediting BarkBox. BarkBox is a great company and a great product. And they had a pet dog. They have a house dog who would get his BarkBox.
A small house dog.
Yeah, he would get his BarkBox every month, and he's got all these cool things that are coming. And unfortunately, the police dog that lived inside the house found one of the BarkBox toys. And
the whole box.
Well, the handler heard him squeaking it. Squeak, 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 and no more squeak. So he goes in there. He was in the kitchen. He comes into the living room, and it's they don't have squeaky toy. Squeaky toy's gone. Little ball's gone. And he's moving the couch. He's moving to entertainment center. He's doing all that stuff. And then he remembers the first aid class that Tiff gave and said, I better try the peroxide because maybe he's got it. And he got it back, but... That could have been an obstruction. That could have been a $3,500 surgery or death. Worse.
Worse, yeah.
Or worse. Yeah. So,
yeah, we saved a lot of dogs.
Yep.
I mean, that's a lot.
Going back to your availability to veterans and friends and
any client,
anybody, absolutely. You guys answer the phones and you help them through that, whatever. And there's been a couple times where it's like 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm like, oh, maybe I should call Tiffany. Thankfully, it passes, but I know that I can.
Yeah.
I know that I can.
Yeah, I get pictures of vomit and poop yep. all the time. I'm fine with that as long as it's dog stuff.
Don't send me
a toilet, but I get pictures because I can look at it and probably really help try to figure out what's going on, whether it's a real illness, whether it ate something bad, if it's stress related, too much protein, you know, and I can try to help you through it.
I will get to some of the questions that were on here, and I'm saving those just so you know. I want to finish talking about equipment and train. Well, let's talk about training and exercise. Our service dogs, what do they need for exercise and training on a regular basis?
Well, every handler should take the opportunity to train. Every time you interact with your dog, you have the ability to train it. Now, I'm not saying put a leash on and just go work for hours, but when it's got to go outside to potty. How is that achieved? Walk to the door, make the dog sit, open the door, and make him wait. So every time you interact, there's an opportunity to reinforce the good behavior that we have already instilled. We've instilled, somebody else has instilled, you're instilling every day. So that's one opportunity. Exercise is super important for, you know, stretching and longevity and stamina.
Joints. Arthritis, yeah.
But you can overdo it, right? So overdo it, not like, people call all the time and say, hey, you know, I play ball for an hour and he's still got tons of energy. Well, mental stimulation is also important because if you just run them, then what are you building?
Stamina
and endurance. And then when you don't have a day to do that, you have your hands full.
Right.
Because he still needs that physical stimulation. So you got to have activity, but it needs to be in moderation. These can't just be endlessly, I go outside and throw the ball with the chunk it till he vomits. And then we go inside because then there's going to be a day when that doesn't happen or a series of days when that can't happen. It's raining, it's snowing, like sideways here for 9 months. and then you have trouble.
3 to 5, 7 to 10 minute sessions daily of obedience. And that could be, like Jesse said, taking the dog, making it heal, going into the kitchen, making yourself something to drink while you're making the dog lay down. and then follow you into the bathroom or whichever. But if you do 5 to 7 sessions, it will mentally exhaust the dog. It builds the bond. It helps that foundation that we've built. It helps maintain that foundation and just build a stronger bond and continuity. And the dog understands from repetition what's expected, and he knows how to act inside as well as outside. If you only practice outside, then, and you don't act like that inside, then the dog may not want to do that inside. So we do it all the time. So the dog always knows that what's expected of him and how to just continue the training that we've already instilled.
Thank you for going over all that. I know it's a lot to remember, and for all of us to, all of us with these kind of dogs, we need to keep, we need to keep on them so that they're not couch potatoes and they're not going crazy in circles. So let's talk about veterinary care. Do they need anything special?
An annual visit.
Well, so they're going to come, they're going to, when we deliver them, when we make the transition from us to you, dog's going to have all the normal shots that you would be required, 7-way, the distemper, the bordetella, the your rabies, all that's going to be covered. And you're going to have a health certificate from the vet saying that that's all he's up to date so far. Going to have his passport. So we're going to send it to its family ready to go. But there needs to be upkeep, just like with ourselves, with our normal doctor visits. The dog needs his doctor visits as well. Because if you want him to prosper and continue to be an asset to you, then he's got to be healthy. So all that stuff's important, super important.
And what kind of equipment do they come with, the service dogs?
So both of our foundations have agreed on a what we call a starter kit.
Gear package.
A gear package. It is a 6-foot leash. Your
what
harness.
What kind of leash?
It is a leather only.
Not retractable.
Not retractable. We don't do that.
I almost died today from a retractable leash from a client because she has
she has
a 70-pound dog on a retractable leash, and it zzzz, and it almost got wrapped around her ankles, almost toppled her over. Oh, retractable leashes are for dogs under 10 pounds, please.
I don't even think.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
So 6-foot leather leash, your flat collar, some kind of correctable tool, whatever that dog has decided is going to be his mode of
correction
understanding.
Prong collar or choke chain.
Could be a choke chain, a prong collar, a Z-collar.
E-collar.
Something that's going to help you control him. And
Poop bags. And a poop bag holder.
Vest. And identification that lets everybody know that it's a service dog, and don't pet the dog.
Service dog patches. Service dog do not pet or ask to pet in the bowl. The collapsible bowl.
So they can give water on while in transport.
Awesome. Okay. So I want to go back to a question that was posed earlier. I had to screenshot it because it went up. Mark asked, when a service dog or a police dog sees you guys, Jesse and Tiffany, either out and about or when they come to visit here at the kennel, which they do, all of them do a lot, do they get distracted or excited to see you guys?
Sometimes. I have a lot of...
I don't think excited.
No, I have a lot of the police dogs that don't like me anymore, which is cool. I'm cool with that because I guess one way to put it is I am...
The authority.
I'm the bad cop. I'm the bad cop side of the business. I expect a lot from them. I want them to be successful, and I want the handlers to be safe, the communities to be supported. So I put a lot of pressure on the dog. So they don't like me, which is cool. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, after we train them and they go live with their new human, it's simply that. That person is providing affection, food, water, all their resources. So... it's not that they're excited to see us. They remember who we are, I think. Some dogs just won't ever like us again, but that's okay.
It took Nemo about a year to stop peeing on your shoes, Jesse. Yeah. He was really mad at you.
But I saw Nemo yesterday, and he loved me.
He loves you.
Yeah,
he does love
you.
So then the other part of that question is also, and you kind of answered it. You did. Also, once they bond with their handler, does the handler become primary, or do you still remain the dominant handler? In other words, does the handler have to transfer the leash?
Probably 90% of the time, I can still run the dog better than they will. right? But at the end of the day, I've been doing this a long time, and I just have a comfort level with dogs that is that it takes a while to get to that point. So it's not that a dog respects me more. I just they know that I'm no nonsense about it. That when you love something, like this is probably not in our questions, but we get asked this all the time, or I used to get asked this all the time. How can you do that? How can you train a dog and give it to somebody else? And the simple answer for me is I'm focused on a specific set of tasks, a specific set of guidelines, and I'm going to do that. But we're down right this minute, but there may be 14 dogs we're working on at one time. And so we're doing a little bit of attention with this dog. It gets an hour with me. And then the next dog gets 30 minutes. Next dog gets 25 minutes. Next dog gets an hour. Like we're rotating through dogs. So they don't, I love them and I love what we're going to do with them, but I'm not loving them like they're going to be loved. And I know where they're going to end up and I know what's going to happen for them. So even when they're down to the last 30 days with me and they're getting, whether it's, I mean, I've had multiple trainers work for us and they're getting 20 hours with those guys, 18 with their trainer, their specific trainer is spending 18 hours a day with them. And then they go to bed and they spend 18 hours with them the next day. But that's still not the same as when you give them to a veteran or give them to their family and they give them to their law enforcement handler and they get 24 hours with that dude. Like that's their lifeline. So yeah. that's what it happens for us is we know they're going to get somewhere better and they're going to get treated. Not that we treat them unfair, but they're going to treat them better than we did because we share the wealth with other dogs.
So when the dogs come in from Europe, are there commands in different languages?
Yes.
What are those languages?
It could be Czech, could be Hungarian, could be
Dutch,
could be French. From Germany, could be from France. So it just depends on where they come from and who had them and how they got to me.
I find it interesting when I come to the school, which the training facility, and then I'm listening to you training with all the different law enforcement or whatever it is. And there's all these different languages going on. I don't know half of them, but it is also interesting to be here training with my dog at the same time and then having another French handler. And I'll be like, oh, what does that mean? What are you doing here? We're sharing that kind of information. It's a lot of fun. So a service dog, what does that $15,000 include, Jesse?
Well, obviously that includes the dog, all the specific training for that person, whatever that may be. And that could be a long list, could be a short list. And it includes basically me for us for the next 10 years. Like you're never going to not get an answer from one of us about what's going on. So it's not just here it is, thanks for the money, and let's move on to next person. That's not, it's a lifeline.
Not just for that dog, but for any dog that's associated with your family, we're here to help. It's not just the dogs that we've sold. We can answer questions about any dog.
Even, you know, so I've did this cost analysis before. Like in my head, I'm always doing like, what is the value of this thing for you? And when you're talking about a $20,000 dog or $30,000 dog or $40,000 dog, for the normal person, even for me, that's ridiculous. That's a lot of money. Like that's silly. Who would pay that? And it comes down to, okay, how long does it get to work? What are the skill set? What do I expect from this product? Even though it's a dog and we love it and it's, you know, it's part of the family, but it has to perform at a certain level. And so then if it's two and it can last to 12, that's 10 years worth of work divided by the price that we paid for it. Is that worth
saving a life? Yes.
Yes. So that's where it comes down to. It's like, what is the cost analysis and what does it do for me and how long can it do that?
Right.
How long can it do those tasks? And when it can last a long time and it can actually save your life, then there's no value for that. That's invaluable. Like somebody else would easily give me $15,000 if their son could still be alive or if their daughter could still be alive or whatever. If they had something to keep their attention and not choose to not be with us.
Right. And Tiffany, you and I have talked about this too. I've been around you guys a lot, so I kind of have an idea of how much time and effort you're putting into it. Of course, I don't know everything, but I don't see.
Thank you, Mark. He's hung for the whole hour and a half. He's got to get.
We're almost done. I appreciate those of you that are hanging on. the time, the energy, the money, the cost, the education, the know-how, the expertise that goes into it, really the dog that's coming out at $15,000, that's not a profit for you guys at all.
No.
This is your donation.
No. And honestly, when we started this, Tiff and I, we sat down and we said, when we started with Rick, I said, I'll do the first one at 15, then I'll do the next one at 14, then I'll do the next one at 13, I'll do the next one at 12, and then I'll lock it in there. That's as low as I can go. I can't go any lower than that, or just there's no point. And I always felt like my end goal was for us to be so successful in our other ventures that we could eventually do those for free. Right? Does that make sense? That's what I wanted to do personally. And that still could happen someday, but I'm not there yet. And about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I had to revisit that number because I was getting destroyed. It was killing me. It was killing us. We're in all that work and not making a dime. And it's tough because the dollar was different. The airfare is different. The crates cost more. Like it's just, the cost was just astronomical. And I had to go back and go, hey, I'm sorry, but we got to go back to 15. And I probably should be at 17, to be honest with everybody. I probably should be at 17 or 18, but we're going to try to stay at 15 unless something changes. Airfare changed 3 times last year, 3 times. Higher and higher and higher. Now it cost me $2,000 to fly one dog. So it's not feasible to do that anymore. You've got to bring 3 or 4 or 5, or it's not cost effective. It's not.
It's a small business. Couldn't survive.
I just want to go back to say that's your donation, though. I mean, I don't think everybody realizes that.
Sure.
They think,
making all this money.
Book with money. No, that's not the case. I see how much time and effort go into this, and just as a novice, I can tell you that's definitely not the case.
Yeah. I wish it was cheaper to do it, but that's not.
Yeah.
And if you go to other places, it's don't be shy if it's not a $20,000 or $25,000 dog, because they want to get their money out of it.
Yep.
Like especially if they raise it from a puppy, it wouldn't be less than $25,000 because that's a year and a half worth of stinking work that they put into it. I want to try to do it in 4 months what they did in a year and a half.
Yeah.
So that's.
And I want to jump back real quick. When we have the veterans come in over the event in August, I think it's the 24th and the 26th this year. And for the cost of the dog, you're saying that you're there for their lifetime. What they also get with that, though, that I don't think people realize the incredible value that's in it, is that they get the camaraderie to be with other veterans, and not just other disabled veterans, but other disabled veterans that are canine handlers. Yeah. How cool is that? I mean, you guys bring in, I don't know how many.
The other thing people won't understand is how much they bust each other's chops. Some of it is hard to get.
Can I tell you, I've been on the phone with a couple of them, and I'm in the background yelling, that's not appropriate. It's not appropriate.
We're going on 2 hours, but I'll tell you this quick story. One of the first times I was with a group. Rick had invited me to Dallas. I'm not even sure where we were going or what we were doing next, but we're sitting in the airport collecting, trying to get everybody off their planes and make sure everybody's there. And these guys are just after one another, left and right, left and right, left and right. And I'm in the corner, like minding my own business, like, oh my God, I never had anybody rib each other like that. They're just getting it. And Omar Avila is really burnt really badly. He's all over TikTok if you want to check him out. And he was busting his chops of somebody else about some parts of his body he lost. And the guy looked at me and said, do you have a lighter? And I said, I don't smoke. He said, do you got a lighter? And he's looking for a lighter. And I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm going to burn that Mexican the rest of the way. I'm like, oh, my. That's it. They're about to fight. It's going down right now. But they were just kicking rocks. They were just having fun. So.
Yeah.
I was nervous. I was like, this is a big old boy. He's about to kick his ass.
Right. I love listening to them banter, and I love watching the camaraderie because it's, oh my gosh, somebody just said Crispy 11.
Yes, that's him. That's him.
Oh my gosh. Yep.
That's his handle.
That's his handler name.
That's what he calls himself on TikTok and Instagram. Crispy.
Yeah. That's just right where I was going with that. But also their families. I mean, they bring their families in, which is phenomenal. I love meeting the families. I love seeing the kids, and the kids get to see each other. And so that August event is, like, I think our most important event of the year.
100%.
So I know we're going on really really long time here. Somebody said somebody asked, have you all worked with any different foundations to get veteran canines? That's Paul. Do you know?
Yep, and we've did three over the course of these last since 2013, three different foundations, and I would obviously like I mentioned earlier, Simplify. Fund has paid for a dog, and they don't do service dogs, but they had veterans that reached out that were prior Marines, or excuse me, can't say prior Marine, that was a Marine no longer in uniform or whatever.
A Marine.
There's been other organizations that have paid the way for somebody. And not that we would turn anybody else away, but we have restricted who we would do it for. If we don't feel like you're doing it the right way, or you're not doing what's needed, we'll move on. But we would take another organization tomorrow if somebody wanted to hire us.
So if a veteran wanted to be considered for a service dog, how do they start the process?
Well, obviously both websites, Troops First Foundation and Battleground22.org, you can go on both of their websites. You can submit information. The Troops First doesn't necessarily have a application process that you can just download and get right after it. Battleground does. That doesn't mean one's better than the other. It just means one is more inclusive. And Rick is real particular, not about who gets one, but he wants to make sure he understands more about you. But not that Battleground doesn't, but he's just a little more meticulous in what are your issues, what have been your issues, what have you done to mitigate those issues on your own, who have you been to become better. How is your financial situation? What is your alcohol intake? What is your medication levels? What are you doing about that? Are you adhering to that? Are you trying to wean yourself off? You're using a doctor to do that. He gets really involved, and he wants to see action, because the last thing he wants to do, and anybody really, is give you a problem when you already have problems. So he's a little more difficult, I would say, because he spends maybe even a year with a guy before he offers up that opportunity.
That's interesting, because I want to talk about Troops First and the relationship between Battleground 22, because there is one, especially with you involved in there. But let's talk about how long does the process take place once you fill out an application or you sign up? What would you say?
If you fill out an application tomorrow, one place or the other, and you got a dog within 6 months, you have... That's amazing.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that at the end of the day, somebody's covering that expense for you. And that's just one aspect of it. We've got to find the right dog and then get it trained and then get it to you. So that 6 months can happen, but that would be fast tracked.
Right.
It might be a year, but honestly.
And I know Battleground 22, we have a waiting list. There's a queue, and we don't jump ahead unless there's like a crazy, crazy emergency.
Yep.
Does Troops First also have a waiting list? Do you know?
I don't know if they have. I know we just, they technically, yes, they do. They do have one right now. I don't know who's behind that one, but I know who's next, if that makes sense. Yeah. I don't get the list like Battleground has been doing. I just get he's next. And find him a dog, or these two are next, find these two a dog, and then they mark, that's their marching orders.
Yeah.
Which I love. Rick and those guys are great. They've done amazing things for Tiffany and I. So.
Well, not just that, but I don't know if everybody realizes the relationship, but Battleground 22's foundation director has a dog from Troops First Foundation.
Yeah. There's a couple of foundations out there that the founder or the runner, overseer of the operations, have a dog from Troops First, and only one of them represents it the right way, and that's Greg with Battleground 22.
Yeah.
And that came from, honestly, that was born from years of Greg being involved and visiting with Troops First and going to events and coming here and participating at the veterans games, and just it was obvious he needed one, and Rick didn't hesitate to step up and say, that's fine, we'll do it, but you need to, it needs to be known where it come from.
And we love Troops First, right? Battleground 22 loves Troops First. We love what they do. We're all in this for the same reason. That's to help veterans. And we love RIP too. And we're very careful when we represent RIP. But I love to point out that our foundation director has a dog from Troops First. Yeah. I think great.
It just shows that it can be done. Like, we're all in this for the same purpose, is to help people. Specifically for this setup is to help veterans. And you can, the lines can be blurred if you, everybody's on the same page.
Yep. All right. I think we've addressed everybody's questions. Is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about before we do a quick closing here? Since
I don't think so. As long as we got all the questions, I didn't see nothing else pop up in there.
I want to say thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul, for helping us out.
Although that whole comment about that Moose's buddy sexier thing is, you guys. Okay, so thank you so much for your time. I want to encourage anybody that's listening to like and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Josephine Canine Services, Verity's Troops First Foundation, and Battleground 22 Foundation. Josephine and Battleground 22 have a bunch of really fun events coming up, all fundraising events. You can find those details and registration information on battleground22.org. All the proceeds go towards our next wounded veterans, Juan, and his service dog, Ezekiel. And then we'll roll right into our next veteran, a victim of MST, Alina, and her service dog, Lilith, who is, oh my gosh, she's a, yeah. So
Tiff's looking at you like, what are you talking about? She don't know I found another dog for her.
She's great. Yeah. We also have an Amazon list that we share on Facebook quite often. And if you purchase something off that list, it gets shipped right to me and is then put into a gift basket for our law enforcement canine teams during our May event. And we have 50 canine teams and we have, we need 14 more or 15 more baskets. So you guys have been super generous. Thank you so much for everything that you've donated, but we need to work on 15 baskets, before the first weekend in May. And then we also utilize that same list for our veteran canine teams, which consist of Troops First Foundation vets and Battleground 22 veterans that come in during our August event. And if anybody was interested in sponsoring in a different way or wanting to donate, just please reach out to Jesse, Tiffany, or myself, because we're ready to put that money back into a dog and help some veterans.
If you don't do Amazon, we'll take a check. We'll take a card. You can send a pigeon with dollars strapped to his leg.
Exactly.
You know, whatever. Yep. Whatever it is, we'll take it and we'll figure out how to use it.
Thank you, Brian.
Yep. What do you do?
And thank you, Greg.
Oh, I couldn't see at the end.
Yep.
No problem. Thanks, you guys. All right.
Thank you for
Mary Sue, thanks for all the hard work. Thanks for putting this together and sharing it 712 times. We have a dance in a couple weeks.
Yes.
It's a gala.
Gala.
Not a dance.
I think we figured out what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do. Tiff's going to wear a suit. I'm wearing a dress.
Yes, sir. I don't have to suck in then.
Yeah. I'm going to dress in a freaking, in a gown with a split up to my hip.
Oh, see, now I'm going to use my eyeballs again.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm going to shave the whole body. Shave it up. Set the hair. I'm leaving the locks.
It's getting kind of long, so that's April 1st at the Iron Ridge Inn.
April 1st.
We're going to have a DJ and prime rib shrimp. We have some amazing signature drinks. I mean, like,
The Dutch Shepherd. Get it.
We do.
The Dutch Shepherd, German Shepherd.
Malinois. And then there's another one special just for Jeremy.
The Red Rocket.
The Red Rocket. All right. So we got to bounce. Before I bounce off of there, I got to bounce off of here. For Dogs and Divas, for Josephine, I'm Jesse.
I'm Tiffany.
That's Mary Sue. Ha! See you guys next time. I'm out. Deuces.